Okay, so I'll proceed with my 15 points, or 15 reflections on death. So the first one is that death is inevitable. And I'll start by quoting a poem from Kukai, which probably most of you have heard at some time or another, his letter to a nobleman in Kyoto. Have you not seen, oh, have you not seen, that billions have lived in China, in Japan? None have been immortal from time immemorial. Ancient sage kings or tyrants, good subjects or bad, fair ladies and homely, who could enjoy eternal youth? Noble men and lowly alike, without exception, die away. They have all died, reduced to dust and ashes. The singing halls and dancing stages have become the abodes of foxes. Transient as dreams, bubbles or lightning, all are perpetual travellers. Have you not seen, oh, have you not seen? This has been man's fate. How can you alone live forever? So this seems very obvious. It's a truism to say everyone will die. But it's only obvious on a superficial level. It's something we know, but we don't really know. Bhante Sangharakshita, somewhere in his memoirs, he mentions that he was in his early 30s when he first realized that he was going to die. And I remember myself, I was in my 40s when I first had the experience or realization that I was going to die, or that death applied to me. Yeah, and it was very different from just knowing in a conceptual way. It's more like, well, for me, it was more like a physical shock. I remember that I was lying on my bed reading. I was actually reading a Shakespeare play. It was a phase I was going through at the time. Yeah, I was reading Shakespeare plays. And I was suddenly hit by the impact of the realization that I was going to die. It just hit me. And I knew beforehand, before I had this experience, I knew that I was going to die. But afterwards, I knew it in a different or a more thorough way. So it's worth reflecting on the inevitability of death. The inevitability of your own death, and the inevitability of the death of everyone you know. And of course, the inevitability of the death of animals, plants, insects, birds, and so on. That's how nature works, and we're part of nature. And the purpose of reflecting on the inevitability of death is to enable and encourage us to live a life of meaning, rather than a life of escapism. Escapism is usually about escaping from the fact that we're going to die. And the other, the reflecting on death also gives us a sense of how precious and how fragile our life is, or how precious and how fragile all life is. It's more precious than a beautiful Chinese vase or a painting by Vermeer. Life is much more precious. So death is the only thing we can be sure of. And because it's the only thing we can be sure of, it's a good basis for living a life based in reality rather than fantasy. So the second reflection is reflection on the time of death. So the time of death is, of course, uncertain. So we might assume, especially if we're under the age of 50, say, that death is a long way off, and we'll have plenty of time to think about that later on. However, people can die at any age, from disease, from accidents, and so on. There's a Buddhist practice which recommends living every day as if you were going to die that day. Now, I think that could be too difficult for most of us to live as if we were going to die today. But we could reflect, how would I live if I knew I only had 1 year left to live? Or how would I live if I knew I had 5 years left to live? How would I live if I knew I had a definite period of time in which to complete my life? This kind of reflection helps us to really distinguish what's important, what's of paramount importance to us. But as I said earlier about reflections, you can reflect in different ways. So even this kind of reflection you could do superficially. There's a movie, isn't it, called The Bucket List, about somebody who knows how long they're going to die and they make up a list of things they want to do before they die. But it's kind of superficial in a way, I think at least. So if you really reflect deeply and in detail, you can develop a greater degree of self-knowledge, and that self-knowledge will tell you what's most important to you. Of course, the time of death is uncertain for us, but it's also uncertain for everyone we know. How would you relate to another person if you knew they had only 6 months or a year to live? Another aspect of not knowing the time of our death is that we may live for much longer than we expect. I remember just a few years ago when I was in my mid-50s, I started to think of myself as old. And I started to think that there were certain things I couldn't do, I couldn't learn new things, or I couldn't take on new projects or whatever. And when I became aware of that, the awareness changed my attitude, and I realized, well, actually, there are lots of things I can learn and lots of things I can take on. So age, I realized, my age is not an indication, or not necessarily any indication of how long I have to live or what I can achieve with my life. And hopefully that's true for all of you as well. Your age is no indication of how long you've got to live or what you can achieve. Okay, the third reflection. The third reflection is the manner of death. So I looked up some statistics on the internet, as you do. And in England and Wales, there are about 500,000 deaths every year. About 500,000 people die every year in England and Wales. And about 85% of those are people over the age of 65. So that's kind of good news for you younger ones, yeah? The major cause of death are heart disease, cancer, and chronic respiratory problems. And for those over 80, Alzheimer's and dementia is a very strong, high death rate from those. So we need to prepare ourselves for the reality of both illness and death. We can prepare ourselves for the reality that, like everything else, illness and death arise in dependence on conditions. And the manner of our death will arise in dependence on conditions. There are no conditions that will free us from death. We will die, yeah. But the manner of our death will arise in dependence on conditions. So, no matter how much exercise we do, no matter what food we eat, we will eventually have to go, yeah? And it's likely, it's quite likely, that heart disease or cancer will take us. Now, that's not to say that taking exercise or eating well is pointless, yeah? I'm not saying that. So long as we're alive, it's best that we maintain our health as best we can so that we can enjoy life. And so that we can do something worthwhile with our energy and our life force, yeah? But we can reflect that the manner of our death is likely to be quite ordinary and very similar to that of other people. Heart disease, cancer, chronic bronchitis, liver disease. And by reflecting on this, ordinary road to death, we can, to some degree, be prepared, at least mentally. So when our time comes, we're less likely to be surprised or angry, or have some sense of injustice. Yeah, we'll be able to accept, with relative tranquility, hopefully, that our illnesses are normal and not some special trial or punishment that we alone are being subjected to. So that's the manner of death. The fourth reflection is preparation for death. How can we prepare for our own death? How can we prepare for the death of those close to us, or even those we don't like? You could say reflecting on death is in itself a preparation. Reflecting on the certainty of death, the uncertainty of the time of death, the likely manner of death, all of that increases our awareness and prepares us to some degree. Reflecting on the values that are important to us, the values we want to live by, and making an effort to live by those values also prepares us to some degree. We're less likely to have regrets. We're less likely to have a sense of being unfulfilled if we live a meaningful life, growing awareness. So we can reflect on what's important to us, what we want to give our time and energy to. And if we live by these values, we're likely to feel satisfied. With our lives and have less regrets, and therefore less fear of dying. In fact, we may even welcome death, feeling that we have completed our life's purpose. Of course, we can also prepare for death in practical ways, by making a will, by putting our affairs in order, making a list of things that need to be done in the event of our death, so that everything is clear to those who are left to look after our affairs. There was a good example of this a couple of years back, I think, when an order member called Manjushvara died. He died while on retreat at Dhanakosha, and in his bag he had an envelope, and in it was a list of all the things that needed to be done when he died. He carried it with him. A really good example of someone being aware of their own death and prepared for it. Of course, as you get older, you can also arrange for someone to have whatever it's called, power of attorney, as preparation for a time when you might be too ill to look after your own affairs. Another thing we can do, we don't have to wait until we're nearly dying, as it were. We can go through all our accumulated possessions, all the papers and things of a lifetime, and decide what we want to do with them now, and even what we want to happen to them after we're gone. And of course, another important aspect of preparing for death is keeping our friendships and our relationships in really good repair. In the end, it will be our friendships and our relationships which will be most important. It's love, it's friendship that's going to matter most. There's a friend of mine who relatively recently had a near-death experience. He was in unconscious for some time. And when he came round from that, he said that various things had happened while he was unconscious, and he was left with the realization that love was the most important. And you'll often hear that from people who have near-death experiences. Okay, the fifth reflection, fear of death. Why do we fear death? Is it because we see it as annihilation? Or is it because we have some lingering fear that there will be some judgment passed on our lives when we come to die? You could say, of course, that we ourselves will pass judgment on our lives when we near the end. If we have the opportunity, inevitably we will look back, and we'll look back either with satisfaction or regret, or more likely some mixture of both. Yeah. So to avoid the fear of having to pass a bad judgment on our own lives, we need to live according to our higher values as much as we can. But you could say really it's our ego clinging. Our clinging to an ego identity, that's the main source of fear. We protect and defend our ego self, trying to avoid unpleasant experience and increase pleasant experience. And that means we keep up a constant effort to control reality. But death is not something we can control. And anything that's outside our control is a source of fear to the ego self. So by becoming less egocentric, by becoming more selfless, we can begin to lessen our fear of death. That's the fifth reflection. How are we doing? Are you still with me? So the sixth reflection is death as loss. So sometimes we find it hard to take on board, as I said, the fact that we're going to die. And sometimes we find it perhaps even more difficult to come to terms with the fact that others die, others are going to die. How do we come to terms with the fact that those we love, those we care for, will one day die? I don't think it's possible to come to terms with the fact that our loved ones will die. If we mean by coming to terms, if we mean that we're not going to be upset, or we're not going to feel bereft, or we're not going to experience a sense of loss, we can accept that as conscious, loving, emotional beings, we will experience upset and we will experience grief. But again, by reflecting on the inevitability of death throughout our life, we'll be creating a context in which our grief is an expression, hopefully an expression more of love than of regret or depression. Yeah? However, sometimes when people close to us die, we may not experience being upset or grief-stricken. Especially this when people are very elderly and when they've been sick for a long time. There may be an expectation in the world around us that we should feel grief and upset, but we may not experience that. That may not be what we experience. When my mother died, I was with my mother when she died. And she died after a long period, probably 5 or 6 years of illness. And actually, I was with my mother. I was holding her hand. I was encouraging her to let go when she died. And when she did die, I experienced joy. I experienced a sense of joy that she had achieved something. She'd been able to let go, and her physical suffering was over. I also, at that time, experienced a real heightened significance of life, a heightened awareness of life and a sense of its significance. And I remember being in, for a week or two, being in a state of consciousness that was kind of dislocated from everyday activities, everyday concerns. So it put me into a kind of continuous state of contemplation, which actually was very pleasant, a very pleasant state to be in. It was a bit like being in a meditative state. That did fade after a couple of weeks, and for me the process was that after a few months I remember writing something. I spontaneously wrote a eulogy about my mother, and that was the final goodbye. Anyway, I'm telling you this to make the point that sadness and grief are not always the response to death. They're not always the response to the death of loved ones. They may be, but it's not always. Different conditions can give rise to different responses. And we don't need to feel that we have to have one particular response. Of course, at Buddhist funerals, we try to concentrate on celebrating the life of the deceased person rather than on our own emotional responses. Yeah, at least for a time. We make the other person most important, and their life we celebrate. In fact, perhaps this is something we should apply when people are still alive. Yeah, celebrating their qualities rather than concentrating on our emotional responses to them. Yeah? Just a thought. Okay, reflection number 7. Death and ill will. So the 6th verse of the Dhammapada says, "Others do not realize that we are all heading for death. Those who do realize it will compose their quarrels." So this is what goes back to what I was saying earlier about the depth of your realization that you're going to die. We all know we're going to die in a kind of conceptual way, but if the reflection goes much deeper, then it affects our relations with other people. So if we're annoyed or angry with someone, or experience a lot of ill will or hatred towards them, we can ask ourselves whether this is how we want our last interaction with them to be. Because, of course, it could be. In fact, I was speaking to someone very recently who told me that his last interaction with his sister had been a row, and he deeply regretted it, but they'd had a row, and she had died in the meantime, so before he'd made good, as it were. So we may not be able to resolve all our quarrels and disagreements. It's unlikely that we can resolve all our quarrels and disagreements. But what we can do is we can work on ourselves. We can work on our own. If we're experiencing hatred or ill will, we can work on that and dispel that. Even if we can't repair the relationship, as it were. And one way of doing that, of course, is to reflect on death, which puts our quarrels and our disagreements into a perspective that makes it easier to calm down our emotions, as it were. When we have that bigger perspective, that enhanced sense of life and the importance of life, then we can... it's a bigger perspective in which our quarrels or our... upsets and so on can calm down a bit. Reflection number 8. Death as opportunity. So because all living things die, because we're confronted with this as a fact in our own lives and all around us, death is an ever-present reminder of impermanence. Now, impermanence, of course, implies growth. It implies life. It implies flowering, as well as decay and death. But somehow, we're able to see impermanence more clearly in endings than in beginnings. So death, whether it's our own death or the death of others, does give us food for thought. And when someone dies, it's an opportunity for us to come a little closer to reality, the reality of impermanence. And it's also, as I've repeated, an opportunity for us to appreciate life fully and experience gratitude for all that's vital and all that's beautiful in life. Reflection 9. Death and honesty. There's a really excellent book about dying by a woman called Marie de
Hennezel,
something like that. The book is titled Intimate Death. She's a French woman who worked in a hospice in Paris, I believe. And the book is full of stories about the final few months or the final few weeks of people's lives. And there's one story in particular that really struck me. I haven't got the details of it. I couldn't find it when I looked in the book. Couldn't lay my finger on it as well. But in this story, there was a woman whose family could not accept that she was dying. And the poor woman felt very lonely and very confused because she couldn't talk honestly with those who were closest to her about the biggest thing in her life. So it left her feeling quite isolated. She could not talk about the fact that she was going to die. She realized she was going to die. She was, as it were, I wouldn't say happy with it, but she was accepting of it, but her family were not. So they couldn't honestly talk about it. And I've seen this myself. You sometimes hear people saying things like, you'll be up and about soon, or you'll be all right, or whatever, when it's clear that it's not true. It's not true. It can also, of course, be the other way around. It can be the dying person who doesn't accept the truth. They may even be quite angry at any suggestion that they're not going to recover. I've also had this experience. People can say things like, you're trying to get rid of me, or quite hurtful things like, you want me to die, or something like that. Yeah. So honesty in the face of death is not easy. But, as in most cases, honesty is the best policy. But it has to be honesty tempered with sensitivity and kindness. So by frequently contemplating the fact of death, we become very familiar with it. You might find this actually in the process of this talk, as I'm talking about death. You become more familiar with it. As the more I'm talking about it, the more familiar you become. We become very familiar by frequently contemplating the fact of death. And that, in some ways, goes against some of our culture, here in Europe especially, where death tends to be hidden. We tend to hide death and hide from death. But that's a kind of escapism, and it's the kind of escapism that Buddhism does not recommend. So let's be honest about death, whether our own or that of others. Reflection number 10. Old age and death. So as I said earlier, I looked up the statistics for England and Wales. Only 15% of deaths are under the age of 65. Most of the other 85% go on into old age. So based on those figures, although some of us will die before reaching old age, the majority of us will experience old age. And old age is a process of dying. Put poetically, it's the winter of our lives. Yeah? Put biologically, it's a period of decay. So part of contemplating death is also contemplating old age. So we should try to be aware of older people. Try to be aware of what life is like for them. What's life like for older people? What's life like for them physically? What is life like for them mentally and emotionally? It's good to get used to the idea that we may become less mobile, or our hearing may deteriorate, our short-term memory may disappear, our sight deteriorates. If we contemplate like this, it can have the effect of making us more appreciative of our capacity to do things like walk, hear, see, remember, and so on. And it prepares us a little bit for the whole process of aging and dying. Reflection 11. Premature death. So, putting it another way, although the majority of us in England and Wales, at least, will live into old age, nevertheless, 15 in every 100 will die prematurely. When you put it like that, it seems quite a lot, 15 in every 100. And of course, that figure will be much higher in some other countries. So it's best not to think that your life will inevitably follow the pattern of old age, sickness, and death. You may die young or younger. You may have some warning of approaching death, or it may happen suddenly. So how you relate to death may depend on what you believe about what happens after death. But in all honesty, whatever we believe about the after-death state, none of us really knows. We have the Buddhist tradition, which teaches rebirth, not reincarnation, by the way. We have materialism, which teaches annihilation, you could say. And we have theistic religions with their visions of heaven and hell. But personally, I can say I have absolutely no idea what happens after death. Yeah? Sorry, can't enlighten you on that. I'm curious about it, and I'm very open to the Buddhist tradition, but I really don't know. If there is rebirth, then we're experiencing it right now. And we can see that it's not problem-free. Of course, the Buddhist position is a subtle one. There is rebirth, re-becoming is more precise. There is rebirth, but there is no being who is reborn. So whether our death is premature or comes at the end of a long period of old age, it's subject to the law of conditionality. Everything arises in dependence on conditions, and what happens after death will arise in dependence on conditions too. Now, the conditions that we have most control over are our actions of body, speech, and mind. Our values, our behavior, our karma, they will bear fruit in one way or another, and that's why we need to pay attention to ethics and to our mental states. Reflection number 12. Death as experience and non-experience. So we tend to think of death as something that will happen to us and to others. We will experience death. However, experience is through the senses, and death is when the senses no longer function. When we die, we have no sight, we have no sound, no taste, no touch, no smell. So in terms of how we normally understand experience, death is not an experience. Of course, in Buddhism, the mind or consciousness is considered to be a sense too. So we may have a mental experience that corresponds to death, which could be blissful or horrible, depending on how we've lived our life. But in ordinary terms, we can experience the process of dying, but not death itself. Also, as I said earlier, from a Buddhist perspective, what we experience or what we think of as I or me or myself, our ego identity, is an illusion. We are a process. We're an ever-changing process. Physically, we're changing all the time. Mentally, emotionally, in every way, we're a process of constant change. There's nothing fixed and substantial about us, and therefore there is nothing fixed and substantial to die. There is just change, and what we refer to as death is simply another change. It's a non-experience. There is in reality no fixed and substantial person to experience anything. Or to be even more paradoxical, there is experience, but no one who experiences it. Just as Buddhism says about rebirth, there is rebirth, but no one who is reborn. Reflection 13. Death is natural. So we are part of the natural world. Nature operates in us in the same way that it operates in a blade of grass, an oak tree, an elephant. And one of the processes of nature is the process of growth and decay. Growth and decay is a natural and a necessary process which runs through all the natural world. Without growth and decay, everything would be completely lifeless. Our planet would be more Martian or something like that. Everything would be completely lifeless. Because we're part of the natural world, because we're alive, we grow and we decay, like flowers and clouds, like the trees, like the wind. Death is natural and necessary, and we can embrace death in our love of the natural world. Reflection 14. A Buddhist attitude to death. So all of these reflections that I've been going through constitute a Buddhist attitude to death. Death is natural, it's inevitable, there's nothing morbid about reflecting on death. In fact, we need to reflect on death in order to make the most of life. But we should, of course, be in a positive state of mind when we reflect on death. So awareness of death can lead us to celebrate life. It can lead us to celebrate life in general, the lives of the people around us, the lives of animals, the lives of plants, all the life around us. Awareness of death can lead us to celebrate life. So death is not a grim reaper. It's just a breeze that floats the leaves to the ground. And finally, reflection 15. is reflecting on death. So we reflect on death because it is the big question mark over our lives. It is inevitable, so it makes sense to be at peace with it. Its time is uncertain, so we need to be prepared now. It's the background to our lives. And being aware of death, we can embrace our lives by heightening our awareness of what is truly most important to us. Our values, the values that are most important to us, the activities that are most important to us, the people that are most important to us, and the purposes that are really important in our lives. And if we're aware of what's important, and if we're directing our energy towards what's important, we will lead satisfying and fulfilling lives. According to the Buddha, we cause ourselves suffering by craving and clinging. And reflecting on death can help us to let go of grasping and attachment. We can have a sense of stewardship rather than ownership towards our possessions, towards our bodies even, and hold them more lightly. So by reflecting on death, we can learn to enjoy and celebrate this wonderful life without grasping anxiously at it. It's a little verse from the English poet William Blake. Here's how he put it. He who binds to himself a joy does the winged life destroy. But he who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. So finally, when we talk about reflecting on anything, we mustn't expect that we can reflect once and then that's the job done. We have to return again and again and again to the same topics and allow our reflections to go deeper, to take root, like tending a garden, until our reflections flower in our lives as wisdom and energy.